You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Scottish Football Forums podcast. We are at season 13, episode 13. Which may be unlucky for some, but not for you listeners, because you're getting to listen to a fantastic panel. So I'm John, I'm your host for this evening, and joined by Scott. Jay, how you doing,
John? Yeah,
I am good. Good to have you back on.
It's good to be the second time this season, I think.
All right, I'm counting. I've got it all worked out.
I know.
For the contracts, to who's on a paper play basis and all that type of thing.
I'm a veteran now, so I don't get on as much.
Aye, exactly. If you're a veteran, I don't know what I am. We're also joined by Robbie. How you doing?
Not too bad at all, John. Good to be here and hopefully have some positivity to speak about today.
Oh, plenty of positivity tonight. Aye, for the majority of us. And then Michael, how are you doing?
Hi, John. How's it going? Good to be here tonight and good to see Robbie and Scott again.
Aye, it's good to have you on. I think you've appeared more times this season than Scott, and you're a guest.
Yeah, I've appeared more times than Santa, so, you know, that's a bit worrying. Yeah.
Aye, but that's no hard, because Santa only comes once a year.
I could go on about that for a wee while, but it's a family podcast, so yeah, I'll tell you my jokes all after the pod if you want to.
Okay, aye, that's probably for the best, Michael. Aye, right. So we've got an action-packed podcast tonight. The plan tonight is to talk about the Scottish teams in Europe. Wee bit touching on the England-Scotland game in the Nations League. The weekend action. Scottish players that are playing in the Premiership. So just it's on the back of an interesting WhatsApp chat we were having last week. And that'll lead on to a wee bit about youngsters and maybe the lack of minutes in the Premiership. And if we've got enough time, we'll maybe preview the League Cup. We might. It's that type of tournament whereby if you're in it, you're happy, you could win it. Whereas if you're not, you're not really bothered. But I mean, there's two Aberdeen fans and we're in it still, so we might well talk about it. Right, let's kick off with Scottish teams in Europe then. We do have an Aberdeen fan, a Celtic fan, and an ex-Rangers fan. Scott, you're representing Rangers, basically. That's what I'm saying, okay?
Yeah, okay.
You're like the correspondent. So, we'll kick off with Celtic. Michael, all the talk has been about Brendan Rodgers coming back. Can he be more successful in Europe in the Champions League? And opening day, they lost maybe a better performance than you've seen before under Rodgers in Europe, would you say, or not?
You know, it's a bit like going to the cinema, right? And you come out before the end, but you know the ending. So, and that's the situation with Celtic. I mean, it's just basic mistakes that they're making. You can't do that at that kind of level. Teams will punish you as well. It didn't help when we went down to 9 men, because obviously, you know, I wanted the ref to blow the final whistle because the game was over by then. But I mean, when the ref gave the VAR chop of that goal, I thought, well, we might be in for a chance here. We might get a point. I mean, I would have took a point before the game anyway. You know, because obviously the next two games are at home, so you're thinking hopefully 6 points at home. But that's not to be. Typical Scottish team always make it very difficult. So, but it's a must-win game. Against Lazio next week, even though it's going to be a very hard game, but we're at home now.
Aye, well, Lazio are in a bit of trouble. I thought maybe when you said about being like the cinema, that Rangers fans thought it was a comedy show and they were sitting with a popcorn. Do you know how Rangers fans and Celtic fans like it to talk with each other, don't they? And take more interest in their team than their own sometimes.
Yeah, well, I would think that the Rangers fans would go on to play for 45 minutes and then, you know, because they can't put a decent performance together. I'm sure we'll come on to speak about them in a wee minute or two. But yeah, they would be laughing at us again as well. But it's just basic mistakes, you know, and it's kind of...
Michael, where do you sit with the first goal? That's Joe Hart's mistake, isn't it? Joe Hart has to hold his hands up. He's the one that can see the wall. He can see the wall, so if the wall's badly positioned, it's up to him to tell them they're badly positioned. And then it still wasn't that fierce a free kick. I still think he could have, even though he might have saw it late, it's still, I think, savable. I think Joe Hart has to look at himself for that one.
It wasn't a brilliant free kick, Scott, but a lot of people are saying that Kyogo shouldn't be in the wall, but to be honest, I can see the point. But I mean, Joe Hart, I mean, he was miles away. I mean, he was that close. I thought he was waiting at the airport to come home to Glasgow. You know, he was miles away from that. So, yeah, I mean, when I saw the replay, I was like, that, you know, what the hell, you know? I mean, even he could have knocked it past that corner kick or, you know, whatever, but I mean, to scan miles away from that, you know, and the time of the goal as well, that I suppose it happened to Rangers the other week at Ibrox. I mean, we scored in, 45 minutes or 46 minutes, and we got a bit of a lift going in for half time as well. And obviously, they got a bit of a laugh last week as well, scoring a goal, a very cheap goal, I would say, from a Celtic kind of point of view. But yeah, it's the same old story every season with Celtic.
And the thing is, as Michael said, there's ones you're down to 9 men in the Champions League. I don't care who you are in the Champions League, you're going to be cupped after that point. Especially, you know, once you've lost a goal and things like that. So, but I think, you know, Celtic can take heart that the performance was, I think, one of the best ones from Brendan Rodgers in Europe at Celtic. Lazio, I think that's a winnable game. You know, I think Sarri will play into Rodgers' hands. It'll be kind of end-to-end stuff. Lazio are a bit...
Before,
yeah, exactly. You beat them in Rome. So you then think that the way Lazio are playing just now, the way Celtic are playing just now, Celtic should really start that game as favourites. You know, their keeper obviously helped them out massively in the game in Madrid with the goal. So, you know, I think I'd be a bit more optimistic probably after the game than before the game with Celtic in this Champions League group, because I don't think there's too much to fear with either Feyenoord, Atletico Madrid or Lazio. But you do need to listen, you do need to keep 10, you need to keep 11 men on the park, and you need to cut out your own mistakes, and that's not what happened.
Basically what you should have done, Michael, is you should have got your fans to riot and got the game abandoned, like what Ajax did yesterday. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, no, I never saw that, but I don't think they would be up for fighting, John, if they've spent Northern Glasgow football fans, they would spend the whole day in the pub, so they would rather stand up than throw a punch.
So Feyenoord were 3-0 up and were just before an hour, and then the game was abandoned because of fireworks and flares on the pitch. Is that what I'm making saying?
Robbie, don't you start going on about fireworks and that. We know what you're like in Europe as well.
No, was it ending
to
do with
your Aberdeen?
Well, they might have left the green big egg over there. That's where the flares went off, Robbie, I think.
Oh, and Michael, just in terms of that Feyenoord game, I agree with Scott that I wouldn't really fear too much of the other opponent, because if Celtic kept 11 men on the pitch, I think they were there for the taking. For being Eredivisie champions, they didn't really looked a bit toothless in attack. They got into all right positions, but didn't seem to really do much with it other than the goals. They missed the pen and obviously had that goal ruled out, which was rightfully ruled out. But Was it just naivety from Odin Thiago Holm just on the pitch and then get sent off right away?
Yeah, I think that was his first touch of the ball. Sorry, first kickoff, that the guy, not the ball. I think it was only on the path for 10 seconds as well. But yeah, it's naivety and I don't know what you feel about this, right? But I was talking after the game on my show that I do, and like we were talking about Lagerbiel, and I was saying, well, you know, obviously Rodgers hasn't got anybody else to put in there, right? But in terms of if he did have anybody to put in there, I think he would be out the team for a few weeks and put an arm around him, because don't forget that he near the cost could go with Ibrox as well, you know, and obviously last week at the kind of European game. But going back to Robbie's point, like I was saying, and I know we'll come on to speak about Rangers and Aberdeen in a bit, but we always speak about the financial side of the game, right? But see, if you watched that game last week, you wouldn't be able to tell who has more money, like Farnoga and Celtic, because like up to that goal, Robbie rightly saying that it was a kind of itsy peachy game, you know. Because I know that we speak about finance a lot in in European football, but I didn't see any difference at all. A bit like the Aberdeen game on Thursday night. I know we'll come on to that in a bit, but like, yeah, I guess I would say that, yeah, that the financial side of the game, you know.
Do you think the finances are that big between Feyenoord and Celtic? Not sure they would be that big, would they?
No, but I'm just talking about that game alone, John. Like, if you, you know, obviously it's miles apart, right? It's streets apart, right? But if you take one game into isolation, that's what I mean about, like, you wouldn't be able to tell the financial gap between, you know, Celtic and Feyenoord just on that game. It might be different next week against Lazio and whatever. And we know that there's a bit of a gulf there, but I'm just talking about for like a one-off game.
Right, no worries. You're talking about defence. How do you feel Liam Scales is doing so far this season?
Yeah, I think he got a baptism of fire at Ibrox, didn't he? And they handled it well. And it was a different type of game in Europe as well. And then a different type of game on Saturday at Livingston, and I'm sure we'll touch upon that in a minute. But I think he's doing well. He's a steady player. I mean, obviously you and Robbie saw more of him last season for Aberdeen, but the games that I saw him, well, the games that I saw in Sports Scene for about 2 minutes, and then obviously the games against Rangers up at Picogla, I thought he handled himself well. It's good because everybody's kind of like injured at the moment. He's got to step up to the plate, and I think he's getting an okay job at the moment.
Right, good stuff. Any other points you want to make about Celtic in Europe before we move on to Thursday?
Just get it on the skills situation. I think, you know, he did enough at Aberdeen last season to kind of show that he can handle the aspects of the Scottish Premiership coming into it, even against Rangers. He played Rangers last season, so it would have been two different for him. The atmosphere's probably a wee bit different, obviously. But yeah, in Europe, it's, you know, there's been a couple of mistakes brought up, but it's not from his point of view. So I think that has to be a win-win for him.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of Celtic fans online praising Scales from going from being sixth choice centre back to saying that he's a proper warrior type defender and he's willing to put himself where it hurts. And sometimes you need a defender like that.
He's also got that ability as well to bring the ball forward as well, which helps Celtic when they're playing against the low block. So that's something that's good from Scales' point of view. And good luck to the guy. Right, okay, let's move on to Thursday. We'll move on to the early kickoff. So Aberdeen went to Frankfurt with not a hope in hell's chance. Everyone pretty much had written them off. And the result wasn't too bad. Performance wise, what do you think, Robbie? Pleased with the performance and the desire put in by the team?
Absolutely, John. I can be the biggest boo boy going, and it's not often I back against my team in the bookies. But I did for that match because I just thought we was in for the thrashing. Hadn't played well in the previous few games. Was looking a bit disjointed against Hearts. Didn't create much chances. But the total opposite against Eintracht Frankfurt, where they just won the Europa League 2 seasons ago, and you wouldn't have thought it. Aberdeen definitely made them work for that victory. And at the end of the day, both goals that was conceded were avoidable. Jack McKenzie, it's silly and naive probably as a young defender to give away that penalty. Got no qualms really about it. It's just clumsy. And then from a set piece, maybe Clarkson or Rubisic should have been on the post or a bit better to stop Robin Koch. But I think all of us looking at that game from afar initially would have been saying, oh dear, Aberdeen could be in for an AZ Alkmaar Dundee United type result. And it was far from it. And I'm just a bit jealous that I wasn't part of that near 3,000 supporters in Frankfurt getting to enjoy that Povara goal, because it just looked tremendous in that terracing.
I could have sworn I took notes in this game, but I was watching it in the pub and I've clearly delighted him. But yeah, I mean, performance-wise, I think Frankfurt obviously had plenty in the ball, but we did manage to counter on them well, and that's where the kind of goal came from as well. Good counter attack. Majovski as well, again, showing his class. I think there was a slight surprise when we looked at the starting lineup in terms of kind of maybe players that had been left out. But yeah, it was an encouraging performance against such a good team. And then obviously Povara getting his first goal. Nice featuring as well, the old Just sold my car
to Dante Povara.
So that's kind of good.
It was a composed finish as well. Like, for someone that of a young player who hasn't had much minutes, I think that was his 17th appearance for the Dons and first game in European group stages. And he has the composure to hit high above the goalkeeper as well, because some people would snatch at it, hit low, gets blocked. So I was delighted for him as well. And he's just got a new contract last week, so which raised some eyebrows, but I hope he can kick on. Young player, enthusiastic, and can maybe be a value asset to Barry Robson's squad as they compete on all fronts.
Yeah, it helps as well having a bit of kind of competition for places as well in the midfield. We were talking before about how there wasn't that in the midfield. We were struggling for numbers. I still feel we are light there in terms of having a Ramadani-type figure. But we've got to cope until January anyway, but we're now seeing, and we'll come on to it later on, but performances of other midfielders shining at the weekend. So
I think that's the main takeaway, because I remember the last time that I was on and I slagged Aberdeen off because they were all going on about, and you know, Barry Robson was one of the main ones, about how the performance was so good against Celtic and they'd lost. And then they went on this dismal run since then. Well, there's no point to that good performance. You didn't build anything on it. You didn't get anything out of it. Whereas, obviously, they had a really good performance in Europe, and then they backed it up. And obviously, we'll touch on that later on. But that's, for me, the main thing, is it's no point having a good performance against a team that's much better than you, because you're kind of expected to get pumped if, you know, Robbie's, you know, betting against his own team, then you know, I mean, that's kind of where you're thinking. But if you can take that, the heart from that, and you can take the performance and then take it into the next game in the league, then that's exactly what you're wanting. That's that, you mean, that, and you know, I applaud Aberdeen for that, because they actually did do something afterwards from that good performance.
Yeah, now it is something we'll definitely come on to, but we've got like a big period coming up as well, because obviously there's a League Cup coming up against Ross County. We then play. We've got Rangers as well to play. And then, but if we can get through that and have some good performances, get some results, then October on paper looks like a bit of an easier month. But we all know that football is not played on paper. It's played on grass, mostly, unless you're Livingston and Kilmarnock.
Can I just say, John, like,
Michael?
I was just going to say, a bit like Robbie, I'm not a betting man. Well, I wouldn't admit it early. But because I would get beat every single week. But like when Aberdeen lost that goal, and by the way, what on earth was that penalty all about? You know, that ref must have, like, you know, he needs to go to Specsavers, or the VAR guy must go to Specsavers. It was definitely not a penalty. But as soon as we lost that early goal, one of the guys in our group chat, Robbie, put on that the group chat Aberdeen's going to get beat 6-2. And I was at that, well, be a bit more, you know, confident in believing the Scottish team and all that. But and they came back and I thought Aberdeen held their own. But it's a bit like when we were talking about Celtic a minute or two ago. It's cheap goals that they're giving away. That, I mean, the second goal Aberdeen gave away was just a free header in the box, you know, and you've got to be switched on in European football because you've gone up not one level, but maybe two levels or three levels. So it's just basic mistakes. But no, Aberdeen should be very proud of the performance away from home, albeit they get beat. But, I mean, they'll learn when the tournament goes on.
Yeah, we maybe get the most favourable matchup next at home against Helsinki. So, I mean, get a win in there. Never know.
Yeah.
Get the campaign going.
You look at it, and Estes Oklu, maybe a bit rusty, hasn't had too much minutes since signing in the summer. He has that chance at the end, and if he shows a bit more composure and channels his inner Dante Polvara, then it maybe could have been a different outcome. But it's no shame at all leaving Germany with no points in just a narrow one-goal margin of a game. It's got to be more realistic chances of picking up points in future games. And I think Aberdeen can put a good account of themselves in this Europa Conference League. And it's just great as a Dons fan to see us back in group stage football for the first time in 16 years.
Can I just ask Robin, maybe you, John, as well, that because that, okay, they get beat on Thursday, but put a brilliant performance in, and they played well yesterday, gave brilliant goals, I saw the highlights last night. Do you think most of the Dons fans will get off with Barry Robson's back?
Until the next loss.
Yeah,
I think it's just the way football fans are these days. It can be very fickle. The pressure was mounting on Robson with the worst start to a league season since 1999, the year I was born, so that said a lot. But we'll go into that 4-0 victory later on. But when you're winning 4-0 and still staying in 11th place, you know it's been a bit of a poor start. However, this last two performances will have bought Barry Robson time. And the fact that there's a huge opportunity, carrot dangling, to get to Hampden semi-final by beating Ross County on Wednesday, it's a huge incentive. And if Robson can do that, then I'm sure the Dons fans will get behind him because they are seeing steady improvement game by game.
I'll maybe answer later on once we talk about the league game. Right. Michael, you mentioned earlier about Rangers failing to have a performance better than 45 minutes, but on Thursday, they managed to get their campaign in Europe off to a good start with a win against Real Betis. So, what were your thoughts on the performance? What was your thoughts on getting a win? Anything you noticed in particular?
I think last 5, possibly 10 years, and you in that kind of period the time frame, Rangers have without doubt been the best team, Scottish team in Europe. I think, you know, both Rangers and Celtic are naturally now more suited to the Europa League. I think the opposition's a bit more of a level playing field. I do think Celtic have got a fairly, you know, good shot at it this season. In the Champions League, I don't think they're going to get humbled quite like they have been in the past and like Rangers were in the Champions League last season. I think, you know, Ibrox can still intimidate teams. I think they're still, you know, Real Betis will say that that didn't really happen, but, you know, I think the second half when it's kind of there's a roar going on behind, you know, it just takes teams out of themselves. And by all accounts, first half, Betis were the better team. Second half, Rangers were the better team. But if you're going to have a half each, you're wanting to be second half the best team when you know you're a level playing field. I think, you know, it's another step forward for Beal. I know people were a bit disgruntled against Motherwell, but I think I will touch on that when we get to that, because I think that's a bit a wee bit arrogant. But I think, you know, getting that win is, as Robbie said with Barry Robson, I think it's bought Beal a bit more time.
A bit more time, it's interesting you talk about a bit more time, because we get a few questions on the back of saying about the podcast tonight, and Graham, our friend Graham, Hearts fan, was wondering is it too early to be thinking about sacking managers? I wonder who he might be talking about. I think it's his own manager, Naismith, but it feels like this year, more so than ever, that we're not even finished September. Almost every manager in the league seems to be under pressure.
So I tell you why time doesn't really come into it, in terms of, for instance, let's look at Robson and Naismith, right? They're the ones that are kind of under the most pressure. Time doesn't come into it as much in terms of the start of the season if it's a prolonged decline from last season. Do you know what I mean? It's not as if it's just the start of this season that I think people talk about. I think it's also what they've seen probably since Christmas time. And, you know, so I think if it was a brand new manager coming in from pre-season, it would be different. But I think if you're looking at what happened results-wise from spring onwards or whatever, then you can think, well, that's why these two managers are under pressure. I think there's ways of doing it. I don't think, especially high-profile fans basically demanding people get sacked, I don't think that's a good look on social media. I don't think, you know, I think we have to remember we are dealing with human beings. We can't just, you know, level everything at them. These people, you know, Barry Robson and Stephen Naismith and Michael Beale and everybody else, apart from Malky Mackay, everybody else, right? These guys are just trying to live their lives. They're trying to keep themselves in a job. Sometimes we have to remember that. Sometimes we have to kind of remember there's a human there, and they're actually probably at their lowest ebb. They're trying to do everything to fix what's wrong. Now, it's up to owners, and I totally get that fans themselves should be able to express how they feel. And if they see that, you know, these are rookie managers, or these aren't good enough managers, whatever, they should be able to say it. They should, you know, be able to boo and all the rest of it. But I think once it becomes, personal attacks or putting up videos on YouTube comparing these two people and, you know, this, that and the next thing, I think that's wrong. I think, you know, you let the results speak for themselves. If the results aren't good enough, then say that. Do you know what I mean? That's all you need.
Yeah. Does it come down to a new kind of pressure? Like, speak before about Rangers and Celtic are under pressure, their managers, because it's basically if you finish second, you may as well finish last. Is it a new pressure now in terms of the battle for third place, because you've got this guaranteed money for getting in the group stages? So that's why Aberdeen, Hearts and Hibs managers are particularly under pressure. Obviously, Hibs have had a change of manager already.
I think it's more about Hibs bringing in the wrong managers. It looks like it could be different. Nick Montgomery certainly speaks a good game. Lee Johnson, I thought, was the wrong appointment from the very start, and he didn't really let me down on that that opinion. Sean Maloney probably did deserve more time, if I'm being honest. I think so I think, you know, you always have to look at the board and the ownership and everything else, and sometimes they do just pull that trigger too quickly. And I think it's more because they expect results, because they've put some money into the game. And you're like, well, that's not how it works. Everybody else does things. They may not spend as much on players, but they may be spending more on scouting and training and everything else. And their manager puts in 24 24-hour shifts and stuff as well. So you can't. That's the thing in Scottish football. You cannot expect to win every game. And I know teams expect to win more than they should, more than they lose. But that's not a guarantee, and you can't really live off that.
I think
Michael, what's your thoughts?
I think Scott touched on a very serious point there in terms of football managers and mental health. Football managers are not robots. We are not robots. We are humans. We do our job. But I think, and a lot of it's to do with social media as well, John. Call me an old fart if you want, but if this was about 10 years ago, a manager would get 2 plans for windows. Now you're lucky if he gets 5 minutes in the job, or maybe a pre-season game, and if he get beaten a pre-season game, you're sacked the next day. I mean, did it not happen down south last season? I can't remember. But in the Premiership game before the season started, the manager got his P45 and checked it all. So, I do think fans would need to be patient and know why they're up in arms about it. And that's why teams are having a very bad season, because if you bring in about 5 managers in one season, bloody hell, that's not going to help the dressing room ever. And, you know, the longest manager in Scottish football is Dick Campbell at Arbroath, you know, and he's getting a brilliant job and a shoestring budget in part-time football. I'm maybe saying that an old fart again here, but football's a business now. It's not football that me, you and Scott, I'm not even going to say Robbie when I'm mentioning, you know, because this is maybe a skill game between me, John, and Scott now, but and I'm not, you know, I'm not Winston, but you know what I mean. Back in the day, it was football, but now it's money, business, and if you're not doing the good on the part, well, cheerio.
Yeah, it definitely seems a lot more cutthroat now, that there's less leniency with boards and chairman and the managers. But I do agree with Scott's point and all your points really about the fact that it could be accumulation from last season. Like Hibs, there was already that El Sakiko in January. At least Johnson survived, and then it just felt like a matter of time. Look at Hearts, 1-6 at the moment, which happened to come against Aberdeen, but they don't seem too pleased that they're dominating possession in games, but just not scoring enough goals. And then Aberdeen, that win, as we said, relieved some pressure on Robson, but the ultimate stat is, I think since getting the job, there's only 3 wins in 15. So for a club of Aberdeen's budget and resources, the money that Dave Koymak splashed out on 13 new players, majority actual players Aberdeen own in transfer fees been spent on, it's quite right to maybe expect more. And I know just putting money at something isn't going to guarantee immediate success, but I think when you are investing, it comes with more expectation. And with the money hanging on that third place, and we're seeing it this season with guaranteed group stage football, there's that incentive to really kick on, and the clubs will battle it out. And I'm sure if Aberdeen exited the cup and got hammered by Rangers and struggled in these October fixtures, Dave Cormack would be maybe thinking about alternatives, because it's that cutthroat in this day and age.
So, Robbie, you're saying there's an expectation when you spend some money. Is that expectation coming from the fans, which I can understand, or is that expectation coming from somebody like Cormack? And I'm like, but you're part of the problem then, because you've been hiring these managers. So who, I mean, if we talk about any other business, the final stop becomes the person who's the highest up. And where does that, should he then say, listen, I've got this wrong 3 times now, I'll let Alan Burrows just make up the full decision? Or
I think I agree with you, Scott, in a sense. I think Dave Koymak's heart's in the right place, and he'll happily get that checkbook out, and is no doubt he's put a lot of money into the club over the last few seasons, and backed Robson in particular this window. Goodwin did get backed as well, but you think about it, he goes on about this top 100 club and the mantra that they want to play, but often the signings maybe don't match. So as much as fans love transparency on social media, it can work both ways, and sometimes I'd rather he just did take a step back and let someone like Alan Burrows or Stephen Gunn run the actual footballing operations, because it's got to just bite him in the arse if it doesn't go well. And you see that with silence when things are not happening well on the pitch.
I said this before to John. I said, I don't know what, and I've seen the kind of blueprint, or they probably won't call it a blueprint in Aberdeen, but I've seen what they want to play, how they want to play, what their philosophies are. I've never seen the same philosophy from Stephen Glass to Jim Goodwin to Barry Robson. And that's, for me, a telltale sign that you're not actually going by whatever philosophy you're kidding on that you're going by. Because if you're going by a certain philosophy, you stick to the same kind of manager to get that. So if you want to play free-flowing football, listen, let's look at it this way. Celtic, that's what Celtic have done, right? They had the Brendan Rodgers, then they stepped away from that philosophy with Neil Lennon, and look where that got them. Then they went back to it with Ange, and then they went again and got Brendan again. So there is a kind of, they want to play possession football, they want to get front foot quite quickly, and they want to be a bit more free-flowing. Now, I understand that there's money constraints. Aberdeen can't be the exact same as Celtic, but you can still play a certain way and kind of build on that and bring in young players and everything else with that, that that's your model. And I just do not see, I look at Aberdeen and every time I see them, it's like from week to week, it could be totally different, never mind manager to manager.
I think I think part of a problem in that was Glass was appointed, and the idea was to play this nice, attractive football. It never worked. There was times under Glass, I think, we actually played our rights against the better teams, against Rangers and Celtic. We played pretty well. Was there a mass amount of attacking football? I don't know, would you say there was, Robbie? I don't think we were necessarily that great going forward. Anything we went forward, I always just thought the opposition are just going to counter attack us and score because we were so lightweight.
Very vulnerable.
Yeah. Cormack then decided, right, I'll bring in Goodwin. Now, Goodwin's never been a manager that's played flowing, fast flowing attacking football. But I think he thought maybe he'll come in. At the time, he was regarded as being a progressive manager, maybe a kind of quite bright future as a manager. There was a whole trying to play out from the back. The defenders that we had could not play out from the back, so that caused our problems kind of straight away. And again, we were really, really easy to counter against. I think at the moment as well, so far this season, under Robson, I don't see much attacking football from them, apart from maybe Sunday. But again, I feel we're really lightweight and hard, really easy to play through. And that's something, and we're not going to hop back to it, but under McInnes, I don't ever feel we were easy to play through. Okay, maybe criticised for performances against like Rangers and Celtic, but at times it was a kind of a boxing match of like you're having to like maybe kind of just sit back at times and then pick and choose your moments. Identity wise at the moment, I mean, if you get results in the park, I don't think anyone really cares about identity, to be honest. We would all love to watch our teams play fast flowing attacking football. See, if you're not getting results, it doesn't matter a job.
But that's the thing, it's like, so if you want to be a wee bit more composed in the ball, you want to be a wee bit more have a bit more strength at the back, that's fine. But you then have to recruit the right players to do that. And that's the thing, I think they say these things, they put it as a wee mantra on their website. But see, when you actually look at the recruitment, you're like, well, that does not marry up with what you're actually wanting. So that then causes confusion. And then, you know, I don't know what it is with Scottish football, but you manage to pick out the worst defenders in the whole entire world. Not Aberdeen personally, but just some of the defending this weekend was absolutely woeful. And it's like, you know, so you're like, well, what are you doing as coaches? Are you then coaching these players properly? There's so many kind of, you're buying players from League Two, and this again will feed into another topic that we're going to have. You're buying players from like League Two in England, and you're thinking you're hoping for the best for foreign players that come in you don't really know that well. And you're like, what's wrong with the Scottish players? And I'm not meaning this to sound like Nigel Farage, but it's like Scottish football's on its up. You know, the Scottish national team, you see English Premier League teams, you're seeing teams from Serie A cherry pick the best players. So they must be available. So are we now in a stage where Scottish teams just aren't actually willing to play these players because they're too busy, as you said, chasing third place, chasing first place, keeping in the league because we're only in a 12-team league. This weekend we did see, 3 16-year-olds, so that's a good point. But you're also seeing these players just getting loaned out. I just don't understand.
Going back to Scott's point, John, that you made very quickly, I won't harp on about this, but yeah, Dave Cormack should get worked, actually, because he basically said, he basically appointed maybe like two failed managers, and like Scott Brown was the box office coming with Stephen Glass and stuff like that. That was just to get bums on seats, I think, at Pecoglou. But he should get put his hands up and say, like, I've made an ass of this. I'm walking, because it all falls down to me. And like when they came on, I don't know about you as a Don fan, Robbie, but when they came on TV getting emotional, I think it was just playing to the camera there.
Some people did question that at the time and say it was crocodile tears. I do think, as I said earlier, he has the club's best interests at heart. Maybe he just treating it like he may be done with his successful computer business is not the same as running a football club, and just needs to maybe make better decisions. And just on both you and Scott's point before we move on, I think in terms of giving youngsters a chance, we've seen Aberdeen loan out Alfie Babbage. I know he's a young talent and he'll have a big future in the game. There's guys like Jack Milne and Finlay Marshall that have trained with the first team squad, but just sitting in the stand at a weekend. And I'd like to see they've integrated more. And then you look at the scattergun approach of the summer transfer signings. John, you've got guys like Oedaria on loan from Hapoel Beersheba, with option to buy, not played any minutes for the club competitively. And you've got Rhys Williams, who's commanding a very high wage on loan from Liverpool. He's fit, according to Robson, but just not in the picture. He's been on the bench in the Conference League games, but not featured. So it's very strange in sometimes not matching the mantra of what the manager or the chairman has actually said they want to do, or the types that they want to have in the building.
Yep. The one thing on Scott's point that I find quite interesting, and I don't know whether it's just something that doesn't work in Scotland yet, or we've not got a head around the idea, but see the director of football approach in Scotland, I'm not quite sure it's working yet. Or is it just something that's not suited for Scottish football?
If it works in everywhere else, it can work in Scottish football. But you
does
have
it work
to be
everywhere else, though? Because I see it in England. Plenty of clubs where he's directors of football. I mean, Chelsea being the prime example. And
wait a minute. Chelsea's just a shit show, right? Man U, since Sir Alex Ferguson, haven't been. They're not a modern day football team. And they've only just. I mean, how long have it taken for them to get a sporting director? That's part of the problem. Look at the teams that have done well with it. Example, Brighton. Right? Those are kind of teams that aren't meant to be doing as well as they're doing, but they've actually, both them and Brentford seem to be the best at then finding players, bringing them in, not necessarily playing them straight away, Billy Gilmore, for example, but they give them a year and then they bring them into the team and they just walk into the team and it's as if they've been playing there for 10 years. I think, you know, I heard a story that Billy Dodds and John Robertson's the director of football at Inverness Cali, is that right? That they didn't see eye to eye and he was trying to bring his players, he was trying to do this to his own players and everything else. Scottish football, it has to come from the ownership. It has to be, right, this is what I want. I want a head coach. That's fine. So the guy comes in as a head coach. Then And it worked well with Rangers with Gerrard because Gerrard knew he was inexperienced. So Gerrard had Wilson and the guy from Man City before that acting as the director of football. It can work, but you have to kind of almost force it and everybody has to be on the same page. So if the head coach is not on the same page, then you'll have to get rid of your head coach if that's what you're wanting to do. I think it could 100% work in Scotland, but we have to get our way from the mismanagement that a lot of these owners do in Scotland. It's so much short-term thinking, it's unbelievable. And that's where we're caught. I think that's why we're having problems bleeding youngsters in. I think that's why we're having problems with, you know, coaches and managers aren't really at their best. It's because we're short-term thinkers, because who else is going to have a 12-team league that only one team can get relegated automatically?
Let's spin it around then, because we were going to do the whole youngsters thing and Scots in the Premiership, maybe kind of later on, but it ties in nicely just now. And it might even be we don't touch much on the weekend action, because it is a kind of topical thing. So this comes on the back of a kind of WhatsApp chat we've been having for a while, and we can touch on it here and there. How many times, Scott? I mean, you've been in the chat for a fair while.
Yeah, no, it's been a few times, yeah.
Comes up regularly. So if you look at it, we'd started talking about, right, promoting the lack of youngsters that are getting a chance in the Premiership, primarily Scottish youngsters. If you look at the overall picture, so I had a quick look earlier on. So this season, there's been 44 players under the age of 21 that have featured, which actually seems not so bad. 18 of them have been Scottish. Then you kind of start to look at how many of them are actually playing regularly.
And how many minutes are they getting?
Exactly. So yeah. Three of them, those Scots, were players that you mentioned earlier, Scott, in terms of the 16-year-olds. So they all made their first appearances off the bench this season. If I take Aberdeen, for example, so Aberdeen, if you look at the example, Aberdeen, they only have two, Conor Barron and Ryan Duncan, in terms of Scots. Now, Conor Barron has been kind of out of favour, only just come back into favour, which is a good thing. But then Ryan Duncan, you would imagine this season will be a squad player, if that at best, now that everyone's fit and available. So in terms of Robbie at Aberdeen, for example, we're talking about identity. We've always had a good identity when bringing through young talent. Do you think for Aberdeen, for example, or even other clubs as well, we should be doing more to kind of promote youngsters into the first team, but not just into the squad and training? We need to be giving these guys good enough minutes, because it's good enough for other leagues. And I don't buy this fact to like the pressure, because you look at the bigger leagues like England, France, Germany, those three leagues are actually a lot better than people think at giving youngsters a chance. In particular, France. I mean, France knock it out the park every season.
Yeah, I'd say, John, if you're good enough, you're old enough in terms of youngsters. And I think that was Dent McInnes's problem at Aberdeen. There was guys like Bruce Anderson or Lawrence Shankland, Declan McManus, that was scoring a lot of goals in the youth team, but was never really getting a fair chance in the first team until it was too late. They would just keep on getting loaned out or getting a two-minute cameo here and there. But you're only going to improve by playing minutes. And I've seen a lot of people on things like AFC chat saying that they should get a reserve league back because we've got such a big squad and there's a lot of players and youngsters on the periphery that they're not getting enough minutes, which I agree on, because you do want to have that pathway, because at the end of the day, yeah, it's great that Aberdeen are now attracting Cape Verde internationals, North Macedonian internationals, but I do think, as you point out with the stats there, just 18 Scottish youngsters playing in the Scottish Premiership ain't a good look, really. And we need to be focusing on how our youth development and pathways can improve. And I think it goes back to what the club's identity is, because you'd want the manager to match the philosophy at each age level. So the players in each team are playing the same sort of football. So when they go up the pathway, there is not much change and you slot straight into that first team. That would be the ideal world. And I've seen teams do that in the past. But as we mentioned with Aberdeen, changing managers so much at the first team level, it's not going to help younger players either.
I mean, look at Aberdeen, right? Look at, like, I don't know, Well, I would class it. I could be missing somebody out, so John or Robbie can jump in and tell me I've missed somebody out. Possibly Ramdani, right? But if you look at the kind of three main transfers out of the club in the last 5 years, say, you're talking Lewis Ferguson, Calvin Ramsey, and Ross McCrory. So why are we not? If you surely in any other business, in any other way of life, you're thinking, right, well, where am I getting this service or product from? Right, I'm getting it from here. This is what's working. This is where I'm getting more prof, my most profit from, because I'm either bringing in the labour cheap, for instance, Lewis Ferguson, and selling on for a bigger profit, or I'm getting it really cheap and I'm bringing it right through the youth ranks like Calvin Ramsey. Surely, there's more of these players, yet you're then loaning them to a league one team who are a bit of a yo-yo side at the moment, or you know, is that the best environment? I don't know. It seems very kind of, it's like, well, let's see them play more in the top level. Let's give them a bit more freedom and a bit more of a chance. Who was the other player that I saw? Is it St Johnstone, Taylor Stephen? And he was their best player against Ross County. He was direct. He was one of those kind of young players who just had no inhibitions. He was the only player that I could really see that was giving his all and was being direct and he was really having a go at Ross County. Yet he then got loaned to Alloa Athletic. And you're like, you're bottom of the table. You're struggling for any sort of imagination, any sort of spark. Yeah, the one 19-year-old forward, and you went, do you know what? I'll go send him on loan, get minutes elsewhere. Are you that good? No. So why are you not playing them? And as I say, if that's where you're making most of your money is via the Scottish talent, then nurture it, play it, use it. It's bizarre. Rangers
across the board.
No, Rangers against Real Betis, never had a Scottish player there in the team. And that's disheartening. You look at Butland and you think, well, McCrory, Robbie McCrory, it seems to have done a really good job at Rangers anytime it's been asked of him. And then they just went, right, we'll just buy another goalkeeper.
But is it not back to what we were saying about 10 minutes ago about managers not giving the chance and the job? And it's the same with if you believe young players to get into the team, and if they play one kind of bad game or two games and stuff, a bit like that, I know you're shaking your head, John, but I mean, I actually agree with you guys, like playing more Scottish players in the game that will promote the game better.
They're not being given the opportunities. That's what it comes down to.
And I blame again the ownership, again the short term thinking, because I think if I was an owner of a football club and I was in the Scottish Premiership, I'd be like, listen, could we try and get as many youngsters through as possible? Look what Hibs did when they had the Whittaker, Brown, Thompson. And these people all thrived off it. They all came through together. Fletcher and everything else. Rangers, again, when you look at the kind of money aspect of things, they sold Patterson on for £10 million. That's where you're going to get your money. That's where, because club teams who've got money look at the best young players, and that's who they're buying. It's not going to be, no disrespect, but it's not going to be these players that they've bought in from Holland or people that come in from Portugal and all the rest of it. How weird has that really been in Scottish football, that those are the ones? Celtic have done it well, but other than that, you don't really see it much happening. Even Rangers, Calvin Bassey was a young player in England, so he's still young British. That's what's got them the money there. It's not because they've sourced this wonder kid from Romania or anything else. And I do believe, look at the Scottish national team, I do believe there's talent there. And that's why you've got teams in Serie A, La Liga, Bundesliga, scouting all the time in Scotland, looking for the next Lewis Ferguson, Josh Doig, Kieran Tierney, whoever, because there is talent there. You know, Billy Gilmore's a prime example. And you've got, you know, Ryan Christie's doing well in the Premier League down south. You've got so many actually now doing well in England, but now we can also send them to Italy. We can also do it. And it's a case of, but you need to really play them. You need to start playing them earlier and then get the benefit of it.
I think I'm not good saying this, but like from a Celtic and Scotland point of view, that you know, good have to look at Kieran Tierney, as you say, Scott, and McGregor from Scotland. You know, and that guy is a robot. A lot of people think he's the human being because he's playing well, but he's playing too many games as well. But listen, I thought that was the whole point of setting up these youth academies all these years ago. And, you know, I think that's pie in the sky because nobody's actually coming through at kind of like the kind of bottom level. And I mean, I know what we're talking about the Scottish clubs here, but like, you know, and Scotland's doing well. And we're going to Germany. I don't care what anybody says, right? But in 2 or 3 years' time, we won't have you know, who's coming up after Lyndon Dykes? Who's coming up after Shea Adams? No one that I can see at the moment, you know, and that's worrying from like a national kind of like point of view, and that kind of like leads us back to, you know, no one's actually coming through these clubs, and no one's staying in the team for a long period of time, you know.
Well, we've got Ben Doak who will come into the final third, but obviously primarily probably as a winger to begin with. But again, that's again shows you the talent that we've got here. And even now, as happy with Billy Gilmore and with Doak, the really best cream of the crop is now getting scouted by the top teams in England. So Rangers and Celtic can't keep hold of these great players that are potentially coming through. But there's still other ones in there, do you know what I mean? I can't for my life think that there isn't. And if there isn't, then at those two clubs, then what are they spending their money on?
There has to be, Michael, as a Celtic fan, does it not concern you the fact that there's almost a loss of identity if you've not got these young Scottish players getting involved? I mean, when was the last time Celtic brought through a youngster that played regularly for the first team? Like a regular starter.
I mean, I think the last Scottish player to get a game for Celtic out was McGregor, and he was on the park for 10 minutes and Saturday was Ian Forrest. Thanks to Joe Hart coming out and getting
Oh, it would
scored.
have been Tierney after Forrest. It
Well,
would have been, yeah, Tierney.
Tierney's away now, but I'm talking about skill at Celtic as well. Maybe Forrest gives a bad example
You've
because
got
I think.
Johnston, who's, I suppose, technically Scottish, but technically Irish as well, for talking football's sake.
But he wasn't a regular
But,
starter. Like he never
yeah,
saw
I
him.
mean, as well, worrying that one of the top two sides in Scotland can't field a Scottish player. But I mean, that's the way it goes. And, you know, I'm gig against it, but the like, money talks, and, you know, but as I keep harping on to that, you know, like if, you know, if you feel there for Scottish players in one or two games and they get beat, well, you know what happens to the manager and the team as well. But you know, I do think that Scottish football fans is not very patient now.
So I think fans do have a lot to do with it as well. But here's a question for all of you, right? So say Billy Gilmore stays at Rangers, Ben Doak stays at Celtic. Do they actually get in the team as quickly as they should? As they have done Billy Gilmore at Chelsea and Doak did at Liverpool, do they? And I know Doak was in the fringes at Celtic, so but does he get more regular there, or do they loan him out? I wonder what happened to that situation, because I think Rangers and Celtic have probably ruined a few youngsters by not playing them as much.
You've got the members score as well that football the agents can get in people's ears and say, well, if you go down there you'll get twice as much money that you do at Celtic or Rangers or maybe Aberdeen to that it's getting as well. But yeah, I mean it's a
See,
shame
quite
how Ben Doak went down to Liverpool. I think he just got one or two games up here before he went down, and he's apparently he's, you know, he's doing well down there. But you know, football agents has got a lot to do with it as well, I think.
Is it just agents though, or is it that Scottish young Scottish players don't see a bright future playing in the Premiership? Like they can any of us sitting here, we've had this debate before. If someone comes on and says, I'll give you five times your money for the same job, you're probably going to do it.
Yeah, forget about that in the sense of what Rangers and Celtic aren't doing. They're not saying to these players, listen, you've got more chance of getting into our first team earlier than you are at Liverpool or Chelsea, now obviously Brighton. And so if you can't even promise them first team football at a young age and they're getting it down south at a bigger club, I don't even know how you can really fathom that.
You'd want to see a bit of a conveyor belt at these clubs.
Chelsea straight away was playing. He was down there for a few years before he got a sniff at the first team. Doak's been a bit different. Doak's been like pretty much first season. Clock's been like, I like him. And I think he was playing Carabao Cup matches.
And who is he? So Billy Gilmore was different?
Aye.
No, he was in the Chelsea squad. He was in the Chelsea squad at 18. So maybe not, obviously at 16, but he was still in
the...
But that's what I'm saying. But Rangers couldn't have guaranteed that he was going to get in any earlier. And that's the problem. And as Robbie says, there's no... You can't. Who does he look at and think, oh, it happened to him? Barry Ferguson? John Fleck, Charlie Adam both get kind of tossed away early. You know, that is, for me, the biggest crime that happened when Rangers got put into the third division was that they then started signing all these players from the Premiership. They signed foreign players and everything else. They should have went up with some of the best youngsters that they've got and given them more game time. And they didn't. They went with experienced pros. And you're like, well, you've ruined your chances of really changing your football club's whole philosophy. And it was a crime.
Well, John, if you even look at Aberdeen, in terms of youngsters in the past, they did get a then club record fee for Scott McKenna. But if you remember the game that he got his debut against Motherwell, which I think was 5 years ago yesterday, it was more enforced on Dan McInnes rather than the choice. Yeah. Sometimes that seems the case in Scottish football. You don't willingly have this conveyor belt in Thomas these youngsters' game time. It's usually just needs must, and that can't be right from a youngster looking in. Ryan Fraser and Fraser Fivey both got slagged off from Aberdeen support for leaving too young, but they might have not, and Jack Grimmer also, but if they didn't see potential and future in Scottish football, then I don't blame them for looking elsewhere.
Fraser and Fivey would be a wee bit different in terms of the fact they were playing first team football. So if we're comparing the likes of Doak and Gilmore to...
Yeah, they wasn't, yeah.
They were playing first team football, so why did they decide their career's better served by going down south, for example?
Money is big. And exposure. It's a bigger
exposure.
League.
Maybe a lack of professionalism in Scotland. Culturally.
Possibly.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, we can't really talk about, you know, youth development, young players coming into the team without talking about my favourite subject, money. And, you know, we just have to look at the TV deal that we've got up here, you know. I would love to see like Aberdeen playing St Johnstone and all that, but in Skegler, but like at Celtic, you know, Celtic and Livingston weekend, Rangers playing some girls next week, Celtic playing some girls the next week, you know. It's okay for like me and Scott, like watching the games, but like as a football fan, you know, a non kind of old firm fan, you're thinking, well, what's the point of me buying Scottish football? You know, and let's face it, I mean, like, we are actually paying money for the Premiership because we're not getting the value of the games up in Scotland. Because, I mean, don't forget that Celtic, Rangers won the league, the first season of lockdown, and we were meant to play at Aberdeen up at Pacogli, and the league was well over at that point. And it was meant to be a Sky game, and Skye pulled out the last minute. The point being, John, is like if we had a better TV deal and more money, then we could attract the young guys to stay in Scottish football, don't go elsewhere. But obviously that's another podcast for another day. I mean, I can go on and on about it for a long time, don't worry, I'm not going to, but it just annoys me. That's how, you know, small teams are, sorry, Brighton fans, if you're listening to this, but small teams like Brighton can afford to buy about our talents for double the money that we can, that Celtic and Rangers can, you know? And that's the biggest problem.
See, on that though, I mean, Brighton, you can call them a wee team, but it's just comes down to resources. They are in Europe now, so. But in terms of Scotland as well, we are, maybe to flip it around, we're seeing some positive stories, because we're seeing Lennon Miller performing at Motherwell, we're seeing David Watson performing at Kilmarnock. So there are some positive stories, but what can we do to get more youngsters playing? Is there a lack of talent?
No, we're at almost a boom stage in terms of Scottish talent, so I don't think it's suddenly going to dry up. It's, you know, looking at the players that have come through, you know, Rice at Rangers, you heavily talked about. Whittaker did really well coming on at Hibs. We just have to trust them, I think. I think we have to bleed them in and just ignore any kind of fan backlash, because fans, as Michael touched on, seem to be easier to really have a go at somebody who's homegrown than it is for somebody you've paid 20 million. Well, that's not going to happen in Scottish football. But any sort of cash for, any sort of foreign name, they'll go for the youngster quicker. And I don't understand. I've never understood that mentality. But if we want to be serious, we want to talk about like Brighton, for example, right? They started basically by using analytics. And what they did then was go, right, okay, we've got a player who can do this, that, and the next thing. He suits our style, as I said before. And then bleed them in. And while they're paying a wee bit of money for them, they're then selling them for £115 million. And that's the difference. There's an actual cohesion behind the full football club. And it's not just one manager says this, that, and the next thing. And yes, they do get a lot more money in TV, so TV money, so there is that that helps that situation. But I don't know, the Scottish teams, do they have loan managers? Do they have people with experience that could tell the youngsters, listen, this is why you're going in loan, I'll speak to you every week, we'll see how you're getting on? I would doubt it. I don't know. Maybe I'm doubting. But this is where we're getting to professionalism, where we don't want to pay that much money for it, because we want to then buy somebody who did all right in the Dutch third division 3 years ago. And it's, you know, I think while we don't have as much money, and it's a shame because I think we do deserve more in TV revenue, I also think that our football clubs are hopeless at spending their money. And that's a big problem, is that they do not know how to run a football club properly.
Just to cover my back there, like, I think Brighton, just because I couldn't think of any other Premiership team, but so don't get in my
Premier
back
League.
When I say that, you know, so I was just to cover my back, you know.
But yeah, positive news stories at the weekend with Whittaker coming off the bench, and that was on the back of Montgomery watching. He was under-18s playing, Rangers under-18s, he was impressed
by a professional football manager, coach. So that's what's happened there. He's actually done a bit of homework. He's went and saw his own under-18s. And that was after giving them a speech the night before and said, listen, I want to give you a pathway. What better way to do that than show them the very next game that look what's happened? And that's why I think Montgomery won a whole lot of plaudits, because he's went the night before to the training session and said, listen, I want to give you guys a pathway. If you play well, you've got a chance of playing for Hibs. He then watches the game against Rangers, picks out Whittaker as being one of the best players and then gives him his debut the next week.
I watched Hibs under 19s last season against Dortmund, and there's a fair few more I think will be getting involved in that team. I was interested in St Johnstone, so I spoke to Danny about the boy Franchuk that came on at the weekend. So he gave me a pretty good response. McLean actually wanted him involved in the League Cup, but he couldn't play because he was only 15, so he couldn't take pro terms to play. Obviously, he's coming in Saturday. Came in on midfield, think he can play in a few spots. A mate of his said, used to coach him and his wee brother at the youth team, and says he's an outstanding and a great kid. They reckon he's not miles away from getting a start there. So that's promising to hear that, that type of story. And Lennon Miller, as I say earlier, David Watson, they're the two big ones. I mean, Lennon Miller's getting rave reviews, starting every game, which is good. But there's definitely more that can be done to get players involved. I mean, Rangers and Celtic, the whole B team thing, they've probably done that to death. But Lowry, how long has Alex Lowry been tipped as a top talent at Rangers? He's had to move to Hearts to get games.
Yeah, and you look at that position, and they've had Ineos Hadji, they've then brought all the Lammers, this, that, and the next thing. And you're like, well, you know, how can you be a young player at Rangers or look at it and think, oh, wait there, I've got a really good chance of getting in this team? If they keep on buying the same type of player in your position, you know, Lowry has had injury issues and stuff, but still, do you know what I mean? It's still, he never got enough game time, and that's then they loan him to Hearts.
Yeah,
must be demoralising if you're in his position. You're seeing everyone else come in and spend heaps of money when he surely would love a run of games to prove his point and surely can be a star in light blues.
Yeah, teams who should praise though for giving kind of decent minutes to players under 21 is Dundee, Motherwell. They're good at it. St Mirren is another one that's bad at it. Two players under 21 and they've had two appearances between them and they both off the bench. So
I don't think Robinson's ever been that great at it. I don't remember Motherwell being fantastic. He seems to know his own kind of player and he'll get them from the kind of lower leagues or down south, from my kind of recollection of Robinson's career. And it's a shame because St Mirren should be that kind of club, that kind of catchment area that they'll have in Renfrewshire. Motherwell, you know, it doesn't surprise me. Motherwell, again, they can show Max Johnston that look, this is what happens. Do you know what I mean? If you play well, we're not going to stand in your way of actually progressing. We just want the best players at Motherwell playing football.
The other thing I don't understand is why that Scottish clubs are reluctant to look at under 21 players, even to sign them from the lower leagues or elsewhere within Scotland. There's been that many that go down south. Why are we not looking at these leagues, not doing it? And the bigger picture is the lack of Scots that are playing in the league, which is a kind of worrying statistic as well. We're actually one of the worst in Europe of playing non national players.
Doesn't surprise me.
And the average age of the team as well, we're up there as being as bad as England. England's one of the worst, and we are one of the worst as well. So, and it's not like we're bringing in quality that much quality from elsewhere, I don't think.
But if you look at England, that's criminal as well, because look at how much they've done in the from the under-21s down. They've been winning tournaments, which is more than the seniors, yet they still struggle big time to actually bring a lot of these players through. But yeah, it's crazy to think that, you know, we always bang on about how many fans we get through the doors and all the rest of it, but now we can't really say it about the players being the best product of our country because we don't play them enough.
What do we think, though, about the bigger picture? I've been worried about the lack of even just Scots playing in the Premiership. That a concern? Overall?
Of course it's a concern. But then, you mean, we were talking about players, you know, it seems to be a lot of playing down south, and you're like, well, why can't we keep them for longer, especially if it's in the Premiership?
I'd say, John, it is a concern that we haven't got these players staying with longevity in the Scottish Premiership. But then again, I can't remember a time in my lifetime where there's been so many Scottish-born players and Scotland national team players playing in top five leagues. So as much as we love our own product for the monopoly of football these days, I kind of applaud these players for taking that opportunity and going and playing in these top clubs in Premier League, Serie A, etc., etc. And La Liga, looking at Kieran Tierney, he's took that chance as well, going out on loan and trying a new culture and a new team. I know we're looking at younger players in that pathway, but it does impress me that it's not just jobbers from the Scottish Premiership playing in the national team, and players have that ambition as well to try things.
Tierney at Celtic, did he not just get into the team via Izaguirre's injury? Is that not how he really got into the team and managed to stay into the team long term? And then he obviously, Izaguirre came back and he managed to hold on to it. This is the thing, this is what Robbie said. It's like sometimes it's a case of you have to be in a kind of injury crisis to prove yourself.
The one thing at Celtic, though, is I'm not sure they had a backup for Izaguirre. So they must have trusted Tierney to be the backup.
But I think...
A team like Celtic, you would expect to have two players around a position that's decent age, so they must have trusted him.
Yeah, possibly.
Coming through, I think. It's a topic we'll continue to talk about for a long time. See what happens. Back to a roving reporter, I'll call you, Robbie, because you are our expert on the panel tonight in terms of women's football. So England played Scotland in the Nations League on Friday. Acquitted themselves pretty well, I think. I watched the game. What were your thoughts on the game itself?
Yeah, it was a bit like the Eintracht Frankfurt in Aberdeen game. I expected the Nations League opener against the Lionesses to be a really tricky test and thought the scoreline would be a lot more convincing in England's favour, having a packed stadium of a light advantage and fresh off the back of just almost winning the World Cup. Obviously, they fell short against Spain in that final, but they've got so many talented players, and this wasn't an England team taking Scotland lightly. Scotland really did go toe-to-toe with them, and England really needed the woodwork and some good saves from Mary Earps to hold on to that win, which says a lot about Scotland and the improvement they're making under Pedro Martinez-Loza, because look at the failure to qualify for the World Cup. I wasn't the only one to question, is Martinez-Loza ball working? It was trying to play possession-based football, but didn't really have that cutting edge in attack. But now on the counter-attack, they're looking a bit more threatening. They've got some really good young players and that balance in the squad coming through. And on another day, you just watched it, but Scotland could have had a potential penalty when Martha Thomas was nudged down in the box by Millie Brighton. It maybe would have been a different outcome. So it's no embarrassment at all to just narrowly lose to England, considering the resources and how far behind Scotland probably are compared to England, who are riding on that crest of a wave at the moment in terms of women's football.
Do you think the new contract for the manager is a good thing? No, do you think you should have waited?
You could say you could wait and see how they get on in the Nations League, but again, continuity can never be a bad thing. And we're starting to, players like, I know she's had to pull out the squad for the injury, but Emma Watson looks a fantastic talent for her age. Great to see Amy Gallagher handed a debut in the second half during that defeat. So we've seen a bit of a pathway for these young girls. I watched the SWPL most weeks, and even I was quite surprised to see Kirsty Howard, 26 years old, been a regular goal scorer at Glasgow City and then more recently Rangers, and it's just her first call up for the national side, but at least she is being recognised. She's replaced the injured Emma Watson, and I'd like to put faith in Martinez-Loza that he can be rewarded, or he has been rewarded with that contract, but he can reward the nation with qualification from the Nations League and start kicking on come the next tournament, which will be the Euros, because it's about time Scotland followed England's lead in pioneering that pathway for girls and women's football.
Yeah. We're not just discussed like rewarding progression and doing things the right way and having a bit of time and just, you know, letting things kind of simmer out and let's see how we're getting on. So we've had that with the kind of men's football and how it doesn't really happen, and then with the women's football, there seems to be progress. So the manager's been rewarded, and we're hoping then that he can take us into the Euros and things like that. So it hopefully he then, as Robbie said, rewards us as a nation and gets us there, and then it kind of shows hopefully that that is maybe the way to go. Is that so? That this is what we want to do. This is the plan. We're going to see some progress. That's great. There's your contract, and then we just go on and on, and we just keep on improving. And you know that's what I would be hoping for. In terms of that's a kind of long-term strategy, and that's what we've not got in the men's side of things, I don't think. Apart from, to be fair to the SFA with Steve Clarke, that has happened.
Yeah, definitely long term because it's been signed till 2027, so we'll see what happens. Obviously, we're recording Monday. Scotland play Belgium Tuesday night. Belgium beat Netherlands 2-1, which was a bit of a surprise. What do you expect from tomorrow, Robbie?
Well, Scotland at a minimum will surely be targeting a third place finish ahead of the Belgians. So they've got to win on home soil under the lights at Hampden. Scotland with a really good team of players playing at the top level. Look at Caroline Weir. Her performance was a joy to behold, really, against England. Just some of her passing, movement, just what I would like to call a baller. So we've got players like that. Obviously, Aaron Cuthbert's missed this squad through injury, but there's a lot of players playing at top teams, so there's no reason why Scotland should fear Belgium. And if we go at them, play similar to we did against England. Martha Thomas, as much as I like her, she did spur a few chances. And in these big games and qualifiers, slash Nation League games, you need to take them. So Scotland can be clinical, play some good football, then I'm more than confident we can get a result against Belgium at Hampden on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and hopefully get a good crowd as well.
Yeah, it'd be good to see. Hopefully, I urge anyone listening to this, if you're at a loose end, then try get along to Hampden. Think it's free to SFA members and
Yeah.
pretty affordable pricing in general. So it would be good to see the backing of the girls.
Absolutely. Right, okay, so we'll move to the weekend action. Saturday, so four games. Sunday, so two games. Very quickly, Michael, Celtic against Livingston, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was the best Celtic's progress from any year. I was actually feeling the worst for Saturday, to be honest with you. I thought we were going to be in a tight game. I know that Celtic just bullied Livingston the whole game, and I know that people were saying that, well, Celtic done well when they went down to 10 men, but I mean, they did well to compete with Livingston for the whole game. Could have been more. Kyogo was back his best. Maiga was all over the park. 1 minute I was looking, and I thought, where is he? He was over the other side as well. Went to the pie stall, went to the toilet, went everywhere as well, and scored a brilliant goal at the end of the game. He fully deserved that. Fred Taylor was back his best the last few weeks. He's not been at his top of the game already. Played well as well. So yeah, I mean that was a good team performance going to that Plastic Park. So yeah, happy.
You're as bad as Brendan Rodgers. Like, I think it was the second line he was making excuses about the pitch. I want to ask about Greg Taylor because you're saying about how he's had a slow start to the season. Has Greg Taylor taken about upon himself to just go, I'm not listening to Brendan, I'll just go back to Andy's tactics and play in midfield?
Yeah, there's a bit like that. Like, but you're always going to get that, aren't you? When a new manager kind of like comes in as well, like, I've been used to playing Postecoglou's way for 2 years, and now you're telling me to play somewhere different and all that. But yeah, I mean, but no, listen, I mean, probably deserved. Sorry, he played well for the whole game. And I'm glad because I was a big led to the fact, even when he was at Kamarok, he was a good player as well. They just need to kick on now. They've got another difficult game away to Motherwell on Saturday. That won't be an easy game because, I mean, as we'll touch upon in a minute, they gave Rangers a decent game yesterday again. They should have took something out of the game. But, if we concentrate on Celtic, concentrate on ourselves, then we just need to scout one of the games up until the international break.
Yeah, the good thing as well for Celtic, I think, as much as you're having issues at centre-back, four clean sheets domestically in the last four games. So that's got to be pleasing, considering what's been going on. And obviously go down to 10 men at the weekend. Another heart attack moment.
That would have been a good kind of headline, John. Heart attack, yeah, that was good. But listen, I don't know if he had a rustle of blood or got. Well, I was going to say got sun in his eyes, but it wasn't very, very sunny, lovely on Saturday, apart from the sort of the two macaroni pies that I had. And I know you always speak about pies in the podcast as well.
You had two macaroni pies?
Recommend it, yeah. Yeah.
Does Keogh go beside you in the queue?
No, he was too big. I had to lift them up.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. I mean, Brendan Rodgers said the sending off of Joe Hart was down the pitch because the ball didn't quite bounce the way that Joe Hart wanted it.
Yeah, I mean, Rodgers came out with that. I'm not going to call it an excuse a few weeks ago at Rugby Park. And we all know on this podcast and everybody that listens, football should be played on grass and stuff like that. Shouldn't be played on that plastic park. But, you know, don't use the park as an excuse. Just use your team because the team was woeful that day. Against Kamarok deserved the win later on the day. But, yeah, don't use that as an excuse. Yeah, I mean, they're professional football players at the end of the day. We get paid good money. I might think they're an old man again, but you know that they're doing a decent job. And we football fans, or sometimes get invited to the press box, spend over high again money and all that, and work for different companies and all that, go along to see the games. But I don't use that as an excuse.
It was out of interest. What do the footballers train on when the weather's bad outside? Is it grass pitches, or is it probably 3G, 4G pitches? It's an easier excuse. I know it's not what they're used to every week in, week out, but they've been playing in these pitches for a few years now. I think it's just that Joe Hart shouldn't be out there. He's too slow. I wonder though, if was he sent off for last man, kind of denying a goal scoring opportunity?
Yeah.
Is the defender not coming in behind him? So, was laws of physics and everything else. I would maybe think, but you know, it was a rush to the head. It was rash.
Yeah, and it was the same way home the other week as we were talking about early on.
Yeah, it seems like. The thing with Celtic goalkeepers and just making rash decisions, because once Scott Bain came on, he also got away with one, and the Livy player probably should have been a bit more composed and dinked him.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like a score, Robbie.
That Livy defender, was it DeLucas? Is that his name? I don't think I've seen somebody. And listen, I'm only going on sports scene, very limited highlights, but he had about five fouls. He was absolutely shocking from what I saw. Anytime Kyogo went near him or Hatate was near him, he was losing the ball left, right and centre.
Right, let's talk more red card decisions. Dundee Kilmarnock, what did you think of the Josh Mulligan sending off? Sports scene, they were all saying no chance at a red card. There's no attempt for the ball at all. For me, it's a red card.
And it's a tackle from behind, which doesn't get thawed enough. Is very, very cynical. I didn't see an issue with it. I did find it funny, though, if you watch sports, and the commentator seemed to think right away it was a red card. and then decided because the referee went to see the VAR monitor that it couldn't be a red, 100% couldn't be a red card. And then he was like, oh, I'm surprised at that. And he went, well, you say you're surprised at it, but your initial reaction was that it should have been a red card. So I don't understand. I think it was a red card. I didn't think the next one that they all thought was worse, I didn't think that was a red card.
It'll be these one.
I could at least see him going for the ball and what he was trying to do. The first one, there was no attempt at the ball and he was coming in from behind and he just took a swipe.
What about the horrific moment, comedy of errors from Derek McInnes? Was the ball out? Was he unfairly treated?
He was outside of his technical area, so I don't think he's got a leg to stand on. So even if the ball wasn't out, he should still not have been there interfering. And as Derek McInnes pointed out himself, his touch was woeful. That was probably the biggest misdemeanour of it all.
To be fair, he did laugh about it, which was good on him considering his defence were absolutely awful at set pieces because both our goals came from set pieces, Dundee's. And also the fact of only getting a point against 10 men. And they had 10 men for a fair bit of a match as well.
So are we saying that Doherty was the man behind the set pieces, the Derek McInnes era?
I mean, Doherty knew the weaknesses, I think, in the defence in terms of how the players would be positioned and all that type of thing, probably as well. And yeah.
You've got to wonder if you come out, you start the season so well, the back-to-back really good performances against the Glasgow two, and then obviously there was late drama in the game at Dens at the weekend, and it's not got that continuity of picking up 90-minute performances. There's, as you say, lapse of concentration with set pieces and then not capitalising on 10 men. But fair play to Dundee. They're unbeaten at Dens Park in the Premiership so far this season and showed that character to salvage a point late on.
Yeah, I think Tony Docherty is doing a good job so far, definitely. Good to see.
I'd say so, yeah. It's good that he's always been tired with that, like, as being Derek McInnes' assistant. So it's nice to see him go alone and prove that he can be a top manager.
I'm sure they shared a nice bottle of bread after the match. Really, let's talk about the Champions League chasing St Mirren, because St Mirren are showing everybody how you play theatre back.
Yeah, the thing is, with St Mirren, they totally deserve that win. Now, I will kind of frame that in the proper manner. Hearts were absolutely shocking, especially at the back. But, you know, St Mirren can only beat what's in front of them, and that's what they're doing. And, you know, again, you know, you wonder if it's because a big part of it is because they've got an experienced manager and, you know, with Robinson and McInnes, who we just talked about, they're hard to beat, as you mentioned, when McInnes was at Aberdeen. And I think that is, you know, if you don't want to be a bit of a yo-yo club in Scotland, then that is, you have to have that solid kind of belly to... And I think St Mirren, again, have shown that, you know, they've managed to pick up some good transfers. I like the goalkeeper, Hemmings, and I like the way they've gone around their business. They played really good football at times, and again, for the highlights that I saw, they 100% deserved that one.
And the wing-backs love to get forward and create goals for each other.
It's nice to see a side like St Mirren. I'm not saying they've got to do the Scottish equivalent of a Leicester, despite their good unbeaten six-game start, but it's nice to see them actually playing some really good football. And when they're doing that in the process, they're getting some extremely healthy crowds as well. I think the crowd at the weekend was like the fifth best since that Smyzer Stadium opened, 7,000 plus in attendance. And then it's been the Buddies' best start to a top flight season since 1948 and 49 season. So it's incredible, really, that what they're doing. If you go to look at the whole budget thing again, of what St Mirren should be expected to do and what they've delivered so far, even though it's only on a small basis of matches.
We ignore Robbie's fantastic facts there and just note down that he said that St Mirren are going to do a Leicester. and he's going to do the podcast in his pants when that happens. So we can all.
It's not a bad comparison in terms of style of play because they're very effective without the ball. They like to give the opposition possession and then just go, right, you break us down and we'll just pick you off here and there. And they should have won more comfortably because the goal, certainly the Mandarin one, or was it Kent, I think? Kent's too soft.
Yeah, what is that? That's that. He fell over afterwards as well. He was already away from him when Kent fell over, so I couldn't understand that one at all.
There's some strange VAR decisions.
What's that, Robbie?
There's some strange VAR decisions in that game, to be honest, that went against St Mirren. If you look at it, they really could have been a couple more goals.
The VAR one, the offside, it's like it's all very well you putting these lines, but if you can't see that person's foot because the angle is absolutely terrible, we just meant to trust that you've got that right. I don't understand.
I didn't buy it. I thought it should have been a fair goal. So I high praise for St Mirren once again. Frank, what was our match on Saturday?
Hibs and St Johnstone.
That is the one. It was it indeed. So we mentioned already about the 2 16-year-olds getting off the bench. I thought St Johnstone competed pretty well for the first half hour or so. But the long told story of Stephen May trying to play up front on his own. Not work.
Yeah, they had this 19-year-old. I don't know if I told you about this boy, Stephen. They got rid of him online. That's right. Sorry.
The St Johnstone was my tip to go down, John, at the beginning of the season. And if it keeps up, they'll go down in about 4 weeks' time. But yeah, I mean, look, I mean, they did scout well against Hibs first 20 minutes. But as we know that, you know, you can have good performances all day, but that's not going to give you 3 points, is it? I mean, St Johnstone's got, 2 points from the games, and one of the games was against Celtic. And then they beat Celtic, actually, with the old boy, Stevie May, coming on the park and then they scoring. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's quite bizarre because... we were just talking about on the podcast a few years ago, St Johnstone won double under Callum Davison in Europe as well. And
never been mentioned before on the podcast, that. Never have I heard that. St Johnstone won the double?
Yeah, maybe I wasn't on that time. But yeah, I mean, it's funny them winning the double. And basically, I think the reason because they've won the double, they've actually went back the way, if you know what I mean, because they lost their manager, they won the double, and they're not doing very well this season, and then my tip could go down.
What's your favourite drink, Michael? Is it a double?
How did you know? I was going to say a Clevel, but it might upset people listening to this. But,
Well, you're not be getting a treble this season anyway, so.
No, I know, but we'll win the championship, John. You can make it that by the
way. Okay, positives for Hibs, obviously mentioned about Whittaker, but the other one that was quite interesting, the boy Tavares that they got from Benfica, who rarely featured under Johnson, managed to get involved, so it gives him a bit extra in terms of an attack. And Adam Lafondre, there was a wee bit of criticism in the summer when they signed him, 36 years old, but again, a bit of genius for the setup for the second goal.
I think it's a good move having that balance between, at one end, you've got a 16-year-old who's just became the fifth youngest player ever to play in the Scottish Premiership, and tonight, just prior to recording, been rewarded with a 3-year deal. You've got that end of the chain, and then you've got someone as experienced as Adam Lafondre, and you can see that paying dividends in the Hibs team, and it's probably was important for Dylan Vente to also get on the score sheet, because when you brought in the summer to provide the goals up top, getting goals is key, and sometimes when you can go a few games out one, pressure can be on you, so he'll be pleased to be on the score sheet. And same as Tavares' involvement, wasn't he signed from Benfica B as well? And I remember last season a lot of Hibs and Aberdeen fans were comparing off, we got the best deal in Hibs got mugged off with Tavares, but it takes players sometimes from foreign climates a bit of time to acclimatise, and maybe under Montgomery you'll get that run of games and prove to be a good asset for the Hibs.
Definitely. Right, let's lead on then. Nice wee link with Benfica B. Duke gets first goal of the season. Aberdeen started to learn how to pass the ball, which was good. It's a teammate, and it was actually on the deck. Miovsky, again, just showing his class. He just gets better every week. A few surprises. And a couple of times we've seen Leighton Clarkson not start. No, that was obviously a busy run of fixtures, but is a midfield at the moment better without Leighton Clarkson?
I definitely say so. I wrote in my match report after the game praising Conor Barron. Last season was a bit of a write-off for him with injuries and maybe agents getting to his head, but both his opportunities in recent games, when he's been trusted from the start, he's really showed a lot of maturity on the ball, springing around, and it helped Aberdeen play a lot better football. So, yeah, Leighton Clarkson was that marquee signing, surprised a lot of people getting him permanently from Liverpool, but he hasn't really done enough. Maybe it's what the manager had been telling him to try to play that worldy ball over the top, but when Barron's been on the pitch, he's shown that he can be a valuable contributor, and he's maybe, is all this talk, will he sign a new contract, will he not? No matter what, if he's given his all for Aberdeen, then I'm happy to see him in that midfield with Graham Shinney and Jamie McGrath, who not only scored his first goal for the Dons, but I thought each game is getting better and better. And for being a free signing from Wigan, there's a lot of criticism over that panic buy, but the more games I see him, he's actually a very intelligent footballer, not just on the ball, but his runs off the ball to create space for his teammates as well.
Yeah, and as pleased as we scored four goals, a clean sheet is always good. Defence maybe starting to take shape because Gartonen has come in, right centre back. Rubisic has managed to switch to the centre, which he's more suited to because he's a bit rash, so he's got, but maybe in the centre he's kind of better because he's not as quick. Jens on the left, who's kind of looking good, best ever assist in the league.
Oh, it's tremendous.
And then, yeah, Miovsky gets a double, gets an assist, Duke scores. Everything is rosy, but it's only one game, so we can't get carried away.
The biggest point of that game for me was Aberdeen's second goal, because after your first goal, it was a bit 50-50 after that. There was a bit of, not 50-50, but Ross County created a couple of good chances, didn't take them. And then once you scored your second, Aberdeen then just controlled the game. And that's all you need sometimes, is just that wee bit of luck to then turn in your favour. You've not been getting that for a few weeks. And then suddenly there you go, bang, 4-0. You know, the goals, especially for Bukowski, was fantastic. And everything seems rosy again. But as you say, it's one game. Obviously, League Cup next.
And John, you could see how much it meant to Duke. Obviously, I think that was a 14 or 15 game goal drought. He hadn't ended the season well, and he started the season, there was a lot of talk. Was he overweight? Was he uninterested? And it's interesting, just as we've been recording, checking Instagram, and Duke shared a photo saying, back to being happy again. So maybe it's just a confidence thing for Duke, because you could tell from the opening couple of minutes, being at the game yesterday, that he looked back to his old self. He was hungry, he was taking on men, he was playing with speed, and he just looked back to what we've all known and loved over the last season. So the way him and Miovsky linked up, and also McGrath just behind him, was great on the eye. And 15,500 at Pathology, you want these crowds to come back, and they're putting on football like that. Take away the first 15 minutes, which I thought was quite scrappy. There was a lot to be pleased about from an Aberdeen perspective. And perhaps after me slating Barry Robson for continually saying, oh yeah, we'll come good. And I was saying, well, when? Because you've got serious matches to play. You are seeing glimmers of hope that these new signings will gel. And Gartonen especially, every game I watch, I think he's holding that defence together. A few times he builds Ruby out and he looks solid on the ball, physically good. and he's compensating the other two really well in that back three or five, depends what way you want to look at it.
Then there's been a possibility that the players have kind of gone to Robinson and say, look, can we stop playing direct and maybe kind of start playing a bit of football? A bit of player power there?
Definitely, potentially. If they probably weren't naive enough to have missed Neil McCann's scathing attack on Sports Scene after that Hearts game, and it was there for everyone to see that Aberdeen just weren't playing very good football and it wasn't effective in any way what they was trying to do. It was not much of an identity. So perhaps they have done. And it was interesting that two of the best players in my eyes for Aberdeen and most effective on Sunday were Johnny Hayes when he came off, or when he came on. It was one of the best performances I've seen in his time on the pitch in ages from him. And then Graeme Shinney, maybe it's because he got more space in midfield, but his driving determination, sometimes folk can say, oh, he's just a fan favourite because he'll kiss the badge. But he was actually backing that up with some really good challenges, drive enthusiasm forward, and he led like a proper captain, which was great to see. Whereas under the other way we'd been trying to play earlier in the season, he was getting picked off by two passes in midfield, and it didn't look like Ross County were going to do that, which was a huge positive for me.
Yeah, having that security of Barron beside him definitely helps, and it's an interesting season for Barron because he's obviously out of contract at the end of the season. So you'd like to hope that if he's back in playing regularly, maybe he'll consider signing a new contract if one is offered. Hopefully he doesn't end up going leaving at the end of the season for nothing, because he is definitely a top talent. Last year was disappointing for him, he never kicked on, but he's a very bright player, intelligent player as well, I think. We'll finish off the weekend action very quickly with Rangers, Motherwell. Bit of controversy in terms of the Brodie Spencer and Tavernier. Again, I think Tavernier's just soft, and I don't think it was a foul.
I think it all depends on, and again, TV isn't the greatest, and whether or not he's actually pulled his shirt. It's hard to really, if he's just touched his back, then I don't think that's enough to warrant a free kick. If he's actually physically pulled the shirt, then it's a free kick. It looked soft. But as I said, the biggest thing I've got is the arrogance that Rangers fans are like, oh, you know, that's the disgrace. Motherwell, what was it? March, February? That was the last time that they lost an away game. They were above Rangers before the game started. You've got to be a bit more respectful. Do you know what I mean? As I say, you don't deserve to beat every team just because you're Rangers or you're Celtic or you're Hearts or you're Aberdeen. You've got to prove it on the pitch. And you got a victory. Do you know what I mean? I think there is a kind of a bit more of a swell against Beale. I think that kind of plays into it. But, you know, have a wee bit more respect. I mean, I think Motherwell looked really good under Kettlewell. I think they did give Rangers a lot of problems and a lot of headaches. But again, Rangers played in Europe as well on the Thursday night. That's always going to be a wee bit of a kind of hangover. If you're asking me, I think that's a good result for Rangers considering Motherwell's form, especially their away form, and Rangers' form's not been that great, to be honest.
I think the biggest concern for me, I don't know if Scott would agree, Josh would not agree with me, I don't think, but like, looking at it from somebody outside in, and maybe Robbie and John's got a comment to make as well, but see, when you watch the Rangers game since Michael Beale's come in, even when Van Bronckhorst was as well, you digging. Come back after the game and say, Rangers played well for 90 minutes today. It's always been, you know, 45 minutes and 20 minutes spells and whatever. For some reason, they just kind of put a 90-minute performance together. And I don't know if the Rangers fans would agree with me. Maybe they're going to say, I will. You're going to say that because you're a Celtic fan, but I'm also a football fan. And you know, the time they watch Rangers live on the telly as well, you know, they don't put a 90-minute performance together. I was just going to ask Scott very quickly, Do you think that the player that Michael Beale has signed is better or worse than the squad that they had last season?
So kind of playing on that point a wee bit. Look at the players that started yesterday. For instance, Matondo and Wright. These players weren't getting a look in at the start of the season. These players were getting touted to be going elsewhere. And for the start of the season, he wasn't playing any width at all. And then he's obviously decided, listen, this isn't working. And he's having to go back to these players who weren't getting a look in. So that kind of answers a wee bit of your question in terms of the players that he's brought in. I would suggest, I think Lammers looks like a good player. I think he needs a bit more confidence, I think. But he's not going to be an out-and-out goal scorer by any stretch. At this moment in time, if you're asking me who would I prefer to have up front, if it was between Dessers, Danilo and Morelos, Morelos at his best is better than those two at the moment. But we've not maybe seen those two of the players at their best, so it's hard to totally judge. Danilo obviously scored his goal last week and then got injured in the process of doing that. So you want to know what the confidence is for him. Going back to your first point in terms of full 90 minutes of swashbuckling football. One, Rangers aren't like Celtic. It doesn't matter quite as much as it matters to Celtic fans. Celtic fans love that kind of aspect. I always look at Real Madrid and Barcelona. Celtic are more like Barcelona. They want to win. They want to win, and they want to win a certain style. Rangers and Real Madrid want to win, first and foremost. Style doesn't really come into it. But I will say that you're right that the Rangers, I can't remember the last time Rangers put on a superstar 90-minute performance. But I think, again, it's got to do with probably confusion from the management team and confidence within the players that are on the park. And whether or not they're settled or they've got the right formation, only they can answer that. I can't answer that. But yeah, they've not done that for a while. And I would suggest that that's probably the issue, is a bit of confusion, a bit of confidence issues.
And see, just quickly, sorry, John, the last time I was on here, I was on with Joris, maybe the wrong person to ask. But I would like to get Scott's take on, like, what you were saying about football fans being ignorant towards, you know, lesser teams, as it were, like the Millwalls and Dundees of this world as well. But like for Josh was saying, well, it was basically saying that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, John, but basically what he was saying was it should come down to the four games that it's up to, you know, who's going to win the league. But My point was to Josh is like, you're showing a disservice to the other teams in the league. I mean, look at Rangers, went up to Aberdeen last season. Okay, Rangers won the game in the first half, but Aberdeen won that one, 3-0 in the second half or whatever. So I think what I'm trying to say is, you're kind of showing a disservice to the other teams. Because, I mean, look at Celtic and Livingston could have beat us on Saturday just because that's a bogey team for the past couple of seasons. So for me, it doesn't really come down to the four games. I don't know if you would agree on that.
I think part of it, just quickly before that, I think part of it was Josh had said that with the teams that are left in the League Cup, Rangers should win it.
Right, so my biggest point to that, right, and I love Josh to bits, but he's very passionate. He's a very passionate Rangers fan, right? So there's a big difference between me and Josh in that aspect. But I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Rangers. Don't care if it's Celtic. Don't care if it's Real Madrid, Barcelona, whoever. You have to earn the right to win. So you have to be switched on. You have to be tactically better, you've got to be fitter, you've got to want it more. And if you're losing a few of those aspects of your game, if you're not tactically astute or you're passionate, you're not as passionate as the other team for winning that tackle or winning the first ball, that's your biggest problem. So you've got to earn the right to be the better team. You can't just walk onto a park and expect to be the better team. So it's all very well to say, yeah, and theoretically, Rangers should and will be favourites for the League Cup, but that means nothing. Again, St. Johnstone won the double. Rangers have been humbled at a lot of times in the last 10 years in Scottish Cup competitions, League Cup competitions. So, you know, by no stretch of the imagination should Rangers be thinking already their hands are on that trophy.
Yeah, definitely. There's no reason why these players that Rangers have recruited potentially, while they've signed players that come with a bit of pedigree, but is no, I've not really seen signs that the actual a team, they've got a lot of individuals, but I'm yet to be convinced that Michael Beale knows his best starting 11 or they've got a reliable goal scorer. It says a lot when the injured injury-prone Kima Roof is probably still the most reliable and best goal scorer. And just before we round up, even Matondo, who would have thought he was going to be back starting for Rangers? He obviously has got an injury and Beale's saying it could be a bad one, but he seemed to be on the way out. So did Scott Wright, and they're having to go back and use these players again. So yeah, a lot of question marks and tune on Clyde Super scoreboard tonight, people still demanding Beale must go. So says a lot after even getting a Champions League win the other day. Or Europa League win, I must say. Getting ahead of myself there.
That's all right, that's all right. So I've decided that we'll not talk about the League Cup. We'll decide how important the League Cup is next week, depending on who goes through. So that's probably a good thing. So Michael, thanks for returning as our guest. Always good to have you on.
Thanks for having me. Yep.
Even if you are an old fart,
Alex,
you said we could call you that if you want. So that's your new name, Scott and Robbie. Pleasure as always.
Thank you.
I say always.
Pleasure. Great to be the roving reporter tonight.
Exactly. Like you're live from Hampden, so it was good. I thought we would have that roving Robbie.
Oh, roving Robbie. Yeah. So those that are listening can't see me. I've got my Zoom background changed to outside Hampden Park, just for podcast purposes. Yeah. But thanks for having me again.
All right. And as is tradition now, happy football.
Happy football.